You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Nabil Amra. Nabil, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Dave. Appreciate it. I'd love to be here.
Nabil, the last time we spoke was actually in the spring of this year, and we did an interview, an audio interview just like this, and there was an article written for the newspaper American Free Press, May 21st and 28th edition of the paper. And I'm going to read a little bit from this article to bring the listeners up to speed, and then we'll get into exactly what happened afterwards, okay?
And sounds good.
Great. The headline is Sailing the Globe for Palestine. Currency trader quits job to draw attention to Mideast issues by sailing around the world. And like I said, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll read certain parts of it. And at the time, Nabil, you were 43. Are you still 43 or did you turn 44?
I am. In March, I will find my 44th birthday.
Nabil Amra, 43, was a successful Forex, or foreign exchange trader, in Minneapolis, Minnesota until he quit his job and spent 85% of his life savings to get behind the controls of the Biscay 36 sailboat that will be his home on the world's oceans and seas for the next year. You were preparing for a race, and your boat, you changed the name from the El May to the Liberty, to honor the crew of the USS Liberty, of course the victim of a savage, premeditated, unprovoked attack on the unarmed U.S. Navy ship in international waters on June 8, 1967, by Israeli air and naval forces. Nabil sat down with me that day to discuss why he took these, what many folks would consider drastic steps, to bring awareness to the plight of the Palestinians and the USS Liberty. At that time, he was getting ready to literally sail around the world. A nine-month race, which began July 1st in western France. I could never do it. I can't imagine that I would be able to sit on a boat by myself and travel around the world on a 30,000 nautical mile trip. But this gentleman did it. He started it. And now he's back home in Minnesota during the hurricane season. And we're going to hear exactly what happened after we spoke last time and how the race is going and what's up ahead. Nabil, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, thanks for having me. Before I even go into the whole deal, I want to thank you and many of your listeners and people that subscribe to the publication. They sent me letters which I brought on board and donations and just great words of encouragement. And can't thank you enough for that, especially in dark times. It's nice to go back to an encouraging letter with someone that I've never met before but has similar interests and thoughts and like-minded people. So that support has been fantastic. And it's really grassroots. There's no question about it. The race is still going on right now, and I was one of 19 starters, and when I was in 12th place, or 11th place, around the Canary Islands, the race started in northern France, I had my self-steering gear break in a bit of a gale. It was maybe 35 knots following sea and wind, but eventually my self-steering gear broke, a big weld on it that I had no way of trying to rectify. I did try everything I could. So I had to beat my way back to the Canary Islands, right in the face of the catabatic winds coming off of those volcanoes. And it was a brutal three-day journey back to the island to seek repairs. And when I got there, I realized essentially it was unrepairable. And so that was the end of my race. I wasn't the first to drop out. I wasn't doing too badly there. But the same issue for two other people that had the very same self-steering gear. There's brokenness. They have an engineering problem there. But it ended their races as well. One of them was the race leader at the time. A really sad story. And that brought me back to Minneapolis to rest and recuperate and wait out the season so I can bring the boat back closer to home, probably in the Caribbean or something like that. So here I am for another month or so. The race is still going on. There are 8 people left in it. At this rate, it's barely half over, so who knows? Maybe nobody finishes at this point, but it is going to be a brutal race, brutal challenge. We all knew that going into it, and we all knew that chances are probably 25% people finish. But I still had hope that I would have been in that 25%, but fortune, she is a wicked temptress sometimes.
So the steering gear, which you would have obviously had no idea that it would have happened, and of course, a little bit...
I had spare parts too, but not what broke. It was a major structural part of it. You're sitting there in a storm looking at broken pipes swinging around because the welds have snapped. I thought about all the epoxies and fiberglass patch repair kits I had on board. And I whittled a boat hook down, a wooden boat hook down to shove it in the pipe at port. But unfortunately, none of that was going to be man enough for the job. So I had to contend with 70-hour sail back to the islands by hand. going into that stiff wind and sea, and it was a brutal exercise. After 30 hours, I knew, oh, this is going to be terrible. And 40 hours later, I was finding my way into port, but it was pretty brutal. It was nothing but a pleasure up to that point. I was fresh and ready to go and ready to start gobbling up some guys. And I have to say, it was a pleasure up to the breakage, but other racers can probably identify with that as not the first or the last person that that happened to.
I think you said this, but I just want to make sure. You really had no idea that it was going to break, right?
One of the English racers, Susie Goodall, her and I were near each other in the Bay of Biscay, and we were shouting back and forth, chatting lonely and at night. And she was complaining about her self-steering gear being so heavy that it was somewhat unresponsive in the light wind. I felt guilty because mine was very responsive. But when she said, so you have no problems, I said, well, there was one thing. I guess it looks a little fragile out there. It's much lighter than everyone else's. And sure enough, that fragility caused an issue.
What day was that, Nabil?
That was on the 15th or 16th. The breakage happened, and I made it back into port on the 19th.
And that was July?
Yes.
Okay. It started July 1st.
Got 2 weeks of the race. It was across the Bay of Biscay, down the coast of Portugal, into the Gibraltar area, parallel with it, and then down past Casablanca and to the Canary Islands. And I had a tough choice there after the breakage. I was maybe 150 miles past the islands, but the wind was straight up the rear. It was right behind me. I had a grim choice. Do you continue 900 miles to the Cape Verde Islands? For what? I don't know. I mean, it's broken. You know, you're going to get there. You're going to be completely shagged. It'll probably take you 15 days of hand steering. You would have been a shadow of the man that started. Or you turn around and you face the full wind and sea in your face, but it's just going to be a few days. You know, I chose the shorter, probably the right choice, but I wasn't going to get any repairs done in Faraday, but it is what it is. You know, there was no good choice. You
Absolutely.
Can't go on for 8 months by hand steering. You know, it'd take you 3 years to finish, or, you know, you just die from the sleep deprivation.
What I was going to ask you was, you said that you had to hand steer. Can you explain for the listeners exactly what that entails?
Well, absolutely. So there's just really no good way to be a solo sailor in 1968 without having some kind of device that would help you with the steering chore, because somebody has to always be at the wheel. And there is a zero electricity, purely mechanical device called a servo pendulum self-steering gear. And it works off of the direction of the apparent wind. And the power comes from a paddle that's in the water that moves around. And the speed of the water over the paddle makes it all happen. So, you know, this thing allows you to pretty much will steer without complaining or needing food or water or energy or anything. And it just does all the chores, so steering, so that you can tend to the sails, sheet in, trim your sails, hang different sails, make them, reef them smaller, make them bigger, go down and cook yourself some food or use the head or catch some shut-eye. All of that becomes not possible when the self-steering gear breaks, because if you're not holding that wheel, you're not going anywhere. So once that breaks, what would have been an inconvenience for two people on a boat, you say, oh, that's too bad. Now I just start steering and I'll pick up after 3 hours and, you know, hand it back and forth. But with one person, the options are very limited. Just basically, there is no option. You're just going to have to keep on dealing. Which, how many days or hours can you do that in any one direction without sleep? It becomes very tough.
Right now, the race is still going on. Like you said, I think you said there's eight people left.
The leader right now is the oldest man in the race. He is 74-year-old Frenchman Jean-Luc Vandenheide. He is a longtime solo sailor and some record holder as a younger man. And he, of all people, is running away with it. The gap between first and second has opened up to a couple of thousand miles. He's in a completely different weather system. So for all of those that aren't a complete spring chicken anymore, it's never too late. He looks like he could use two new hips and knees, and he's still out there and he's winning.
Wow, amazing. So is there a chance that you could get back into the race, or is it over?
At this point, I cannot. However, me as well as 10 other people that have had to drop out for one reason or another, it sounds like there is a lot of interest for these same people to re-enlist. In 4 years, they will do this again, 3.5 years from now. You know, I certainly could be talked into something like that. I feel as though I have some unfinished business, and it was too soon for me, too soon. You have a great boat, a mighty vessel. It has a great name and great lineage. There's no reason why great things still can't happen.
Right, exactly. After all the preparation you did, I imagine that there was a great level of disappointment.
Oh, yeah. Put a grown man to tears, quite literally.
I'm sorry that happened. But I'm sure you'll be...
The sweet isn't so sweet without a little bitter, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. I'm sure you'll be back. You prepared for this, as I mentioned in the beginning, you quit your job. I imagine it was a pretty good paying job being a currency trader.
It was.
Can
it
you
was.
Get back into that? Do you have any plans to get back
in? I visited the old office and what have you, and was amazed at how quickly I was replaced on one hand. And on the other, I kind of had my thoughts that after a venture like this, chances of going back to the bank in that capacity was probably going to be diminished. It's funny how you touch a hot potato like this, and it seems like sometimes doors get sticky latches and nothing opens. But I planned for this eventuality, and I'm not desperate right now. And frankly, people say, wow, that must be disappointing. No, it wasn't. I feel as though this was something that had to be done. It was a great press, great exposure for normal people to see another normal person that experienced something and share that experience with other people. Humanize the Palestinian plight and know that we're all Palestinians now. That's the truth when you really think about it.
Getting back to the malfunction aboard your ship, do you think there's any chance that your ship, because I know we talked about this prior to you taking off, you didn't want to leave it unattended. Do you think there's any chance that it was sabotaged?
If I thought that, I'd be the first one to scream it from the mountaintops. But the fact that same breakage happened to two other boats with the same gear in the same spot, I'm going to call it what it is. It was luck of the draw, an accident of racing. I'm not going to blame anybody else for that shortcoming. Than myself. I'm the one that picked that gear. That being said, rather than look for the potential negative, I'll say the positive. While I didn't feel like the story got much traction stateside, it seemed to stop after one leg or two, never much for sharing. By the French, they were overwhelming me with their positive response. And I have to say, growing up stateside, you always get the impression that there's some little animosity towards them, disdain. I found it to be completely unmerited. These people were enthusiastic supporters. They were so happy to see a Palestinian American represented and to see Libertas in their press releases and to see pictures of the original Liberty in one of their pictures next to mine, the insert photo. That was a success. I even heard French citizens was cruising the dock looking at all the boats for the race, saying, well, I've never seen an Israeli flag at any of the races here, so he has my support. Little things like that. You can say that it's a tiny win, but if you change one mind, it was victory.
Absolutely. Nabil Amra. Nabil, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to listeners, and thank you for doing what you did, even though, of course, you didn't finish the race. You went in there, you quit your job, you put your life on the line for something greater than money. And as I said, while you didn't finish the race, I'm sure folks can rest assured that Nabil will be back in the race or some kind of race in the future. And when you are, I'd love to sit down and talk about that.
Excellent. I really appreciate it. Abe, you're doing a service to the nation, having this outlet for us all to listen to. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I will be back anytime you'd like.